listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Ever on January 17th. How are you, Paul?
How are you?
Holding on to furniture.
You're suffering. You're suffering. You have sciatica? Is that
it? Yeah, it is actually the lower, the disc at the bottom of my spine that is having some issues.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You're usually so active and you and jubilant and running through.
Yeah.
You walk through here and you look like... You were less jubilant.
I'm feeling like I'm 100.
Oddly enough, you look fantastic. Well, you look so regal.
That's the lighting.
Is that it?
Yeah, I take it everywhere.
I wanted to ask you about your little Blanche Dubois lantern covers, but I didn't want to.
We don't want to go there.
Go into too much detail of that. Yes.
No. Listen, we'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts. I should probably get the sponsorship stuff correct. If I'm going to screw something up, or screw up the sponsor, I'm going to try that again. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com. And I'm doing it in my Michael Sterling vocal cord sound. One of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And you know, Paul, the first part of the hour, I am so thrilled, and I know you are too. We are delighted, ladies and gentlemen, to have back a great friend of State of the Arts, long recognized as one of the most talented and dynamic vocalists performing today. Her style...
I'm sorry, I couldn't contain myself. Myself.
That's an intro.
Her style is flavored with essences of soul, sprinkled with pop, jazz, and gospel. Recently, she has added author to her resume. Finding My Voice, My Journey Through Grief to Grace is available on the web. And we've got to say hello right now to Nita Whitaker LaFontaine.
Nita Whitaker is here. And if Ronan, if you are listening, my mouse does not work. So if you could come in here and check this out, I would be forever grateful. Because I'm trying to click. Yeah, I'm trying to click on my applause thing, and I have no cursor. So
I'll help
assume
you.
Yes. Okay. Beautiful.
Right here.
Would be great. Yes, let's try that again. Oh, there we go. I think
love
we have
that.
I think
that we're living for? Applause.
That would be right.
And joining us shortly thereafter, he was recently named co-artistic director of LA's acclaimed Celebration Theater, whose work we have discussed frequently here on the show, I think about six times in the last year. But he's also a brilliant actor in his own right. As it turns out, we've known one another for 30 years and lived very similar existences with the same in Chicago friends and everything. We were talking like in the waiting room, and hey, how are you? Oh no, it's back, Ronan. It's our
producer, ladies and gentlemen. Ronan Rosner.
I think I have low mouse batteries.
Okay. You see how prepared is he?
He's gonna swap out the batteries, and I'm just gonna hum quietly.
Make it
longer than there'll be more. Let's get back to Michael Shepard. He's a brilliant actor in his own right, with credits including Little Shop of Horrors on Broadway, extensive TV appearances, and some of the country's most acclaimed theaters, including Steppenwolf, Victory Gardens, and San Diego Rep. Michael Shepard joins us.
Yeah,
give it up. Give it up.
Sounds low budget
so,
when we clap.
What's that?
Sounds low budget when it's
oh,
just
oh, no, we'll try it.
No, I liked it low budget.
There we go.
Oh, smattering.
Oh, they're screaming.
Yes. We're gonna make up for it with 35 seconds of clapping, which is how long this took.
No, really. Sit down. Stop. Yeah. Come on.
Put your pants back on. Come on.
Good Lord. They wouldn't know me with my pants on.
I am not going to touch
there
that.
We go. Oh, there
everyone
we go.
Already has.
What kind of party is this? All right. Anyway, it's lovely to have both of you here.
Yes,
we're delighted to have
yes,
you here.
Is.
Thank you.
And
Paul, let me ask you something. How was your week? I know that you went to theater. So did I this week.
I did. Last night I went to see the Freud's Last Session.
Yes.
With Judd Hirsch.
Yes.
And Tom Cavanaugh.
I love Tom
Cavanaugh. Who did I see in the lobby? Nice celebrity sighting in the lobby. Oh, Hal Holbrook was in the lobby.
Oh, very
yeah.
nice.
I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It was Hal
very
Holbrook.
Distinguished Hal
yeah.
Holbrook.
And it was a very enjoyable evening. I will say that the performances were outstanding. They mm-hmm. were as good as you expect from artists of that caliber. Had a little issue with the script though, just because it was two people. Mm-hmm. And it's two people talking mm-hmm. for 86 minutes in an office. And
yes.
one of them is Sigmund Freud and the other is C.S. Lewis. And it never actually, they don't know if it actually took place, this meeting between the two. It's sort of a fictionalized thing of what could have happened. Mm-hmm. And what are they talking about? But they're talking about God, the existence of God. And, you know, Freud is an atheist and C.S. Lewis
right.
is very religious. And while the performances were great, I couldn't help think, sitting there, that boy, there could be a lot more at stake in this conversation mm-hmm. than actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole thing. I just would have liked a tad more meat on the bone as far as
right.
what they were talking about.
Or maybe a song in the middle.
You know, and so I tried to supplement that by breaking into song mid-performance, and they didn't care for that at all.
They didn't like that?
No, and I just thought I was being supportive. You know, and it was just my own outtakes from Jesus Christ Superstar, given the theme.
Full voice.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, well, I go all the way, you know.
I don't
pull my
there
punches.
You go.
But the Broad Theater, love them there. It was a beautiful venue there.
Gorgeous. Have you been, either of you?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So
lovely.
Nice.
Gorgeous
space.
I got to see my friend David Cromer's amazing production there.
Another friend we have. We were both founding members of Blind Parrot Theater Company in Chicago.
You and I are founding members of Blind Parrot Theater Company.
Oh, my God.
Is
yeah.
three of you?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What did
I
you
did
do
the
with fir-
I did the call.
I did Oedipus a Requiem with David Cromer.
That's craziness.
That's so funny. All right. Anyway, back to this.
Here we
that's
go.
That's unbelievable. It's
so
spooky. But you were a theater goer, too.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate that? On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you
performance,
rate
performance is 10. Really.
Yes.
Performance is just unstoppable. I would give the script a mid-sevens.
Promising, though? I mean,
oh, yeah.
More work,
yeah.
work to be done.
Oh, no. I mean, it's still something to see.
Right.
It's just that when you set, you know, you tell people who those two people are, you expect a certain
right.
weight of discussion, and it was just a little lighter than I expected it to be.
You
and
expect
it was,
to leave out there quaking.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I felt.
Well, I, on the other hand, Paul, was at the opening of Peter Pan at the
What's
Pantages.
What's that?
With
Kathy Rigby.
Kathy
she was
Rigby.
Flying all
Kathy
over
Rigby
the place.
Kathy Rigby is Peter Pan. It's actually
is.
How this is billed, and how can I say this? I know Kathy, and
don't be
I,
kind. Just tell the
oh,
truth.
Oh no, I love her. I mean,
okay.
she.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
That's how he feels about
it. It was as wonderful this time as it was the first time I ever saw her do it. Now this woman has done this 4,000 times. Am I correct?
At least 4,000 times.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
And she is 60 years old.
What?
And she looks like
she just turned 60 in December.
Yeah.
She
Did looks,
she really?
Yeah,
60
years
Well, there's
years
something
old.
About being small. See, I could never
yeah.
be, I will never look like a 15-year-old because I am 5'10".
Yeah,
so
not,
I would never, I can never, you know, Michael J. Fox. But she's so
effervescent. How she even gets through the performance is beyond me. I
well,
mean,
it's not that she just gets through the performance brilliantly, but she goes out in every theater and signs posters and autographs
right.
for everyone. Sometimes she's there for 2 hours
right.
after the show is over.
It's
yeah.
like an eight-hour work
day.
Yeah.
Opening night.
Yeah.
She was doing that on opening night.
She does it every night. It's,
oh, every
yeah,
night.
Oh, every night, you know. No,
she
it,
must
she does
love
it.
What she's doing, obviously, or she wouldn't be doing it.
She absolutely loves it.
Well, you know,
and,
yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Three trips to Broadway with this show.
Wow.
Three trips to Broadway.
Was there a Tony nod at any point?
No. There's Tony nominations.
She got nominated for
Did
Tony.
She?
Yeah. For a performance.
Oh, that's so
twice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for her.
You know who I ran into last night who was talking about it was Don Grigware was at the performance.
Yes.
And he actually, he was talking about various Peter Pans over the years. And he said he's seen Kathy Rigby. And he said
Sandy Duncan.
And he said even Mary Martin. He said Kathy Rigby is the best Peter Pan there
is.
Ever was. Because those two were dancers primarily. And with all else that she brings to it, you know, he said that she's just untouchable. And,
well, as she is. And
very
and
excited
also
to see
also, what I find incredible is the support she has around her, people like Michael Shepard and an incredible cast, her co-star Brent Barrett and Kim Crosby. Brent was truly terrific in this
Brent
role.
Brent is delicious to work with. And just when he steps out and he has that whole posturing thing. And I get to see him as he's walking out and preparing for it. Because I look right at him at one point and he's just about to walk out. And you just see him sort of like settle down into this role of Hook.
Hook and the father, of course, Mr. Darling, doubling up in that role as is the standard in this show. But what a beautiful, beautiful
Oh, does that production. Normally happen?
Yeah.
They usually double
up? Oh. And, of course, the magic, I'm not even going to say, because if any of you parents out there, if your children haven't seen something like this before, I don't want to spoil it for them, but there's something so exciting at the end of the show that Kathy does, and it's just breathtaking, and gets everybody up on their feet, of course. But you've got to go, ladies and gentlemen. Treat your children. Mm. Get them exposed to theater. Something like this comes along. Only she hasn't been here in 8 years with this show.
And this is the final tour for her. She's
final
been
tour.
Very clear. This is it. And I urge any parent with children to come see the show. This is the perfect show to introduce in the theater.
Yeah. But yet, not just a children's show.
Absolutely not.
For the children and all of us.
For the children,
One of the things that people talk about was that at the beginning of this tour, people were going, oh, it's not going to make it. No one really cares about this sort of show anymore. And we are selling out everywhere we go.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's been kind of amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic. And to get your tickets, ladies and gentlemen, as Michael was just saying, you better do it sooner than later. Go to BroadwayLA.org or Ticketmaster or simply call 800-982-2787. And, of course, you can go to the Pantages box office, which I find is actually the best way to buy, straight through the box office.
Straight through the box office.
Right at that window.
No extra charges.
No extra charge, and they usually give you really great seats.
And there's a nice bar across the street. Not that I've been told there's a nice place there.
At the W.
And Mr. Paul Sterling, for our listeners who would like to go see Tom Cavanaugh and Mr. Hirsch in the Freud show, how can they do that?
I'll have to get that material.
Probably the Broad Theater.org, I imagine.
I have it somewhere. I will dig it up little later.
Yeah.
I want to bring my dad is actually coming into town. I want to bring him to see Peter Pan.
Oh,
he'd be all over that.
Oh, yeah.
Because my father just loves to, you know, my father loves theater, but his true joy is picking things apart.
Uh-huh.
So he'll just be he'll look at the technical aspects, and that will make his day, just because he'll try to figure that out. It was great growing up with a guy like that.
You're not scarred.
Not at all. I'm just going to sit here in my happy place. Meow, 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 meow. Meow, meow, meow. Let's move on.
All right.
Our first guest is a former Miss Louisiana and Hall of Fame Star Search Grand Champion winner. She's comfortable singing in any setting, from an intimate club to arenas, as well as stage, television, and movies. She's been the guest performer at the Freedom Awards, honoring Oprah Winfrey, President Bill Clinton, and actress Ruby Dee, one of the great actresses of our time.
Mm-hmm.
Sang duets with Andrea Bocelli during a winter tour, and also has performed with Josh Groban, Michael Bublé. Did I get that right?
Bublé.
I see him, and I get that name wrong every single time. And Chris Botti, I know that because I'm a paisan. Having David Forrester as one of her mentors, she's performed and shared the stage with countless celebrities, including Barbara Streisand, Faith Hill, Celine Dion, Richard Marx. Shame you couldn't get any big names.
I know. Can you do
Stevie that? Stevie Wonder and Yolanda Adams. Please welcome the lovely and equally talented Nita Whitaker LaFontaine.
Yeah.
I love that applause.
Well, we're out of time. But thanks.
Well, what that intro.
How are you?
I'm good.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm good.
Before we get into it and talking about all the things that you've done, I want to make sure that people know from the onset that you're going to be at Michael's Fantastic Club upstairs at the Federal.
Sunday?
And that is Sunday.
The 20th.
Here's Where I Stand, and you're back with Nelson Cole as your musical director, who's been with
great
you forever.
Nelson Cole.
Awesome.
Yes.
And that's this Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and that, of course, at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. That's 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in North Hollywood. Reservations 818-754-8700. We will throw this information out a few times, mm-hmm. but why Here's Where I Stand? What is the significance of the title?
Well, as we move through this thing called life, you kind of figure out more and more who you are, because you don't come here knowing. And Here's Where I Stand is about, this is what I am now, this is where I am, this is who I am, and what I know is what I know. As a performer and artist, we all go through phases of trying to be what we think other people want us to be. And I, of course, being a Southern girl, had the disease to please. So I went through many incarnations. Oh, they want me to be an R&B singer. Oh, great, I can do that. Oh, they want me. I could do that. And I could do all of that. And right. I'm blessed that I could do that. But it's sort of a knowingness of here's where I stand is this is what, this is who I am. This is what the music that I love. And that's what the show is about. It's not really a musical journey, more of saying, this is kind of where I am now.
Okay. Did you find, as you said, the disease to please, which is, I'm writing that down because that's a great term.
Yes.
Did you find that that helped you in terms of broadening your abilities when you were sort of defining yourself as a performer, or do you think it dissipated your energies? Was it
benefit? A little of both.
Yeah?
A little of both, because I think it was great because I love all forms of music. I love from classical to Broadway and everything in between, pop and jazz. And I kind of settled into an area that where I made a living, you know, doing pop music. But I also always loved this sort of old standard stuff. But really, the things that Streisand sang, that was the area that I really wanted to get to. But
right.
There wasn't an avenue. So, you know, you do what's in front of you, which is what most of us do. We do
right.
what's in front of us. So that's what I did. And I learned, I grew, because every time you step in front of a mic or onto a stage, just by performing, you become better. You should become better just by the act of doing what you do, and your craft grows by being around other brilliant people as well.
Right.
So certainly all the times, all the stages, the people I've been exposed to has been nothing but a plus in my life. But I do think, in as far as the record world is concerned, I was too diverse.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
Well, just let me sign.
Yeah. can't stamp a label on your forehead. And,
exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I was really hard to put into a box. And I never liked being in a box because I like a lot of things. And I'm multifaceted, as we all are. And as an artist, I think you have to be to survive. You can't be one thing. I mean, you can have one sound, you know, Taylor Swift, you kind of find a lane.
Right.
And maybe that was the diversity, the distraction is that I didn't find a lane.
But when you find a lane, your growth is so limited.
Well,
you know, you're just sort of like you please people who are looking for that narrow thing.
Right.
But I'm sorry, Michael.
Well,
No.
I'm finished what you're saying because I was going to.
No, just I mean, who you mentioned, great performer, but there's not really a whole big breadth of it, you know.
No, it fits.
I want to be very careful how I phrase that. Michael, what were you about to say?
Because she will write about you, honey, and put you on blast in a song. Yes,
well, she could write all she could write all she wants, but I still have to remain 500 feet away.
That's
of course. I was going to say, conversely, there are people, many of the singers that are, you know, on the radio that we're listening to that have all these great hits, but that's the only lane they're going to be in. They don't not diversified because they can't get out of
that. Well, one artist, I mean, Streisand, of course, is one. Relinda Ronstadt, she went everywhere that she wanted to go, and I think that was sort of what I had in my mind. That's where I still, I don't think that talent should be limiting. I think it should be expansive, and you should explore all the things that you are.
Yeah.
Because we have many talents. Michael isn't just a singer. I mean, he's running a theater, and I don't know all the things, but I'm sure we all do many things, and why are we going to limit ourselves?
Right. Exactly.
So
It certainly makes our lives more rich in a spiritual way. And
indeed.
Emotionally. Yes.
It's one of the few fields the business of show that the worst advice you could give someone is find the one thing you're good at and stick with it because
right.
you know it's just you know it narrows your choices you
exactly
know?
Nita you had a very interesting beginning early on in your career with David Foster. Will you tell our audience about that connection and what David did for you?
I met David through our mutual publicist at the time. I just once finished winning Star Search and was with Rogers and Cowan. I'd hired them.
My old stomping grounds.
Yes. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's where I
Sandy
began.
Cowan, I think that's his name.
Sandy Friedman.
Sandy Friedman.
Yes.
Hello. Sorry, Sandy, if you heard that. Anyway. Sandy took me to a studio. He said, I want you to meet David Foster. Now, I will admit, I did not know who he was. I loved songs, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to producers. I paid attention to the singer and the background. So that's kind of where my head was as a singer. So I didn't really know his discography. I just knew he was probably somebody pretty impressive. So I walk into the studio, and he's working on, his Christmas album. He's got a broken leg, and he's newly wed. And I said hello, and I went way too dressed up. I had on like a Fit and Flare shiny dress with, you know, the baubles here. And he has on jeans, so I am way overdressed.
And a cast.
And a cast. So I go in, and he's sitting down, and we say hello, and I have nothing. That's funny. I have nothing. I don't have a demo with me because I just done Star Search, so all I had were tapes of Star Search. So he took them, and that last song that everybody loves, Piece of Sky, which is, again, the Streisand. Here I go. Who do I think I am trying to do Streisand? But I love her song choices. Anyway, that was my winning song. And so he liked the song. He said, well, let's work together. And it started from there. And then I think the first job he called me for was to sing for Natalie Cole. We were doing a tribute to her thing through NARIS, which is the Grammy Foundation. And it was unforgettable with a great singer named Warren Wiebe, who no longer is with us. Warren Wiebe. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to think. I thought, okay, I think this is good. But I didn't have any expectation. But having come off Star Search, I expected a record deal, which they didn't give you. You know, they give you a record deal. Now, you didn't get it. You got your little change, your little check. And it's like, okay, hope it works out for you.
Jump in the pool.
Yeah. And that's what it was.
But you'll be the only undefeated winner of Star Search, right?
Yes. Yes, that's why I'm a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
I didn't know that at the time, and I will tell you, I didn't want to win Star Search because, you know, the winners didn't do so good. The losers did better, and I was like, well, I'll just, you know, I'll go be on two or three shows, and I'll lose, and I'll go home, and because I had a baby, you know, I had a little baby girl who was like the light of my life, and I thought, well, you know, I'll be on and get off and then move on, and I kept winning, and no one was more surprised than me. So, you know, I never take any of that stuff for granted. I never take it too seriously because competition to me is not... It's really unfair. We're artists. One isn't better than the other. It's about who that person likes. It's subjective.
Yeah,
it
completely
depends on the kind of music that you like, if that person sang something like that. So I never took that stuff really seriously as far as, you know, I'm better than the other singer. Yeah. That's truly not what it's about. You just kind of learn and grow and try to keep it moving forward. So that was my beginning with David Foster. And then the second time he called me was... I decided to do a cruise ship because as a singer you want to work. I said, let me try this cruise ship thing. And I went and did one out of San Pedro. It was a little weekend when there was a 4-day when I did 2 weeks because I had to leave my child at 14 months, which was like, you know, tantamount to Sophie's Choice. They're like, leaving home.
It's like leaving your foot at home.
Yes. Yeah. I'll be home in 2 days. I mean, this is me. terrible. Way over the top, Mom. Everything I do is over the top. I mean, I don't know how to
And she's like plagued with something like, who's the crying broad?
Yes, exactly. And I go home, she's playing, and she could do 4 new things. I was like, what? You know, I don't want to miss anything. So he called me on the cruise ship. And the story is, I got a call. Somebody told somebody, and I come to my room. They go, David Foster's on the phone. I'm like, okay. And so I get on the phone, and he's like, I got this new song. I want you to come when you're on your off day on the Monday, and we're gonna, I want you to sing it for Alan Thicke, for Kevin Costner. I'm like, well, wow, that's a lot of names in one. So I get off the ship and I take a nanny with me and I take Skye because I haven't seen her, so I want her to be with me. And I'm at Alan Thicke's house. I'm thinking, how did I get invited to this party? So I'm sitting there in this beautiful home, and the nanny takes Skye out to the court to play ball. We always bring a ball and toys and books. And so in walks David Foster with his gorgeous wife, Linda Thompson, and Kevin Costner. And there I am. I'm like, okay. So they teach me the song on the spot. The song was I Have Nothing. And I end up doing the demo for Whitney, and I end up re-singing it because they changed the lyric. I did it again for the director, Mick Jackson, and then they asked me if I wanted to be Whitney's stand-in. I said, no, that's not a career choice. And then they said, well, there's a part of the girl who sings in the movie. I said, that part I'm interested in. And that's
you
how
sang it actually on the Academy Awards within the movie.
That's right.
Right.
Correct. Oh, yes. Yeah. That's
awesome.
That's a long
Well, speaking of singing,
I think we should. That's a
wonderful way to get into a track that we have here of Nita's. This is called One Voice.
Yes.
And we're going to play this to listen. But when we come back from listening to this, we also have a little bit of time left, and we want to touch on your new career as an author.
Yes.
Which
please.
Is something how very, very that. Interesting.
Thank
so
you.
This is Nita Whitaker LaFontaine, and the song is One Voice.
Come together. Got to
Talk about cooking.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. That is so... I have not heard you sing like that.
Well, it's a different place. You know, I've done... Because I've done musical theater and I've
Of course.
Done, oh, because I've done musical theater and other genres of music, and I even love to sing legit, but that's a song that I wrote, and it was for my
you
second
wrote.
Album. Yeah,
wow. Beautifully produced, album. By the way, too.
Thank you. My friend from South Africa, Cedric Samson.
Nicely done. And to hear the rest of that song, of course, you have to buy the CD.
The CD? When, is it also One Voice?
Mm-hmm.
One Voice.
Okay. And I'm sure that's on all the outlets, the CD Baby and Amazon and all that.
It is indeed.
Which is it available through your website, Nita?
Yes, it is.
It's on the interweb.
On the internet.
On the World Wide Net.
Yes, darling. Yes. The World Connect.
Speaking of World Wide Web and other things that are available through Nita Whitaker LaFontaine, she's added author to her resume. The piece is called Finding My Voice, which actually sounds a little bit like your performance here. Very, very similar. Finding My Voice, My Journey Through Grief to Grace is available on the web right now. And can you give us a little, is it possible to give us a little synopsis of that?
I will be really, really quick. This book is a journey for me. I began it about a year after the passing of my amazing, wonderful husband, Don LaFontaine. And
keyword amazing. Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Really an amazing being. And I was at the bedside in my head for a long time. I couldn't leave the side of the bed. And I went to a class called Writing the Heal. A lady had a workshop. I heard about it and went because I needed some outlet, some creative outlet.
Writing to Heal.
Writing to Heal.
Okay.
Miss Jackie Parker. And it was in my neighborhood. And I just put one daughter in college and one daughter was going into high school. And I just had all this time and the space that was so new, you know, because my Donnie wasn't there. And so I began the journey of this class just really not to write a book. It was just to kind of write stuff because I've always enjoyed that. And out of that class, after several, I said, gosh, I think, because I would share what I was learning, and people said, you should share this, Nita. It might help somebody else. And after maybe a couple of months, I went to her and I said, I think if there's a book in me. I think I want to, you know, talk about what this journey is, what it looks like, but also the love story. We had such a beautiful love story. So the book is our beautiful love story. We're married 20 years, as well as my grief journal. And that grief journal includes bringing my two daughters along with me and trying to shepherd them through their grief as well as grieving myself. And what that looks like, what it feels like, what it tastes like, the love story, the beauty of it, the how it continues, how love doesn't end, and the things that I've learned. And my hope for the book is that it can be a beacon for other people as encouragement who will have to walk that road of grief. And it's a continuing thing. It doesn't end. You're not better in a year. It gets different. You find a different place to put it.
It's about living with it.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Finding my voice is finding who you are without that other person. Finding your ownness, your oneness again. Right. When I've been a duet for 22 years, we were together 22 years. And I want the book to be able to reach those people who need it.
Wow.
But it's a beautiful love story. If you get nothing else out of it, it's a beautiful
love
story.
And you touched on something which I think a lot of people don't think about when you're a parent. If you lose a spouse, people immediately think, oh boy, that person has to grieve now. They don't have a spouse. You still have to be a parent the whole time.
Right.
And you mentioned it in not only dealing with your grief, but helping your children through the grieving process. There's definitely an audience. I hate to say audience because it makes it sound monetary, but there's definitely people who will need need those words.
Well, and Don and Nita's daughters are gorgeous and equally talented young ladies who every time, because she plays once a year at least for me, or has in the last few years, and every time I see these girls...
They're changing and evolving.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
My youngest daughter was just selected as a finalist for the Young Arts Program. She was selected out of 10,000 kids. They selected 150. And of those, there were only 5 pop vocalists. She was selected.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Are they going to be on your show this year?
I just want to throw it out there again. The book is Finding My Voice, My Journey Through Grief and Grief to Grace. That's Nita Whitaker LaFontaine.
And it's also downloadable.
And that's downloadable.
Oh, nice.
As well as, you know, you can purchase the actual book.
On the web. So, thank you. I just want to touch on that. Oh, and as a quick reminder, too, although we'll throw this out at the end of the show, she's at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. That's this Sunday, January 20th. And that is, of course, 5303 Lancashire Boulevard in NoHo. I've got to stop making my NoHo joke. So they got all the prostitutes. They got all the prostitutes out of there, so it's NoHo now.
NoHo. That's
a 5:30, 6 o'clock dinner seating, a 7 o'clock show. Reservations highly recommended. Actually, essential, right?
Essential, yeah.
818-754-8700. That's 818-754-8700. We want to burn through this arts count, the sweepstakes that we have.
Yeah, should we do that?
Yes, do that, Michael, and we're prepared to talk to the lovely and talented Michael Shepard.
Absolutely. And ladies and gentlemen, what Paul is talking about is it is time for our State of the Arts sweepstakes, as you well know. Thank you. Sponsored by Breakdown Services, and each week we raffle off a different prize to a fan of State of the Arts. The prizes are furnished by Breakdown Services and include free yearly subscriptions to Casting About, casting agent directories, free video uploads for actors, headshot retouching, even a free year of unlimited submissions on Actors Access. And to enter, all you have to do is like us on our Facebook page by visiting facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA. So, Paul... You want to give that wheel a spin?
We're going to do the drum roll instead, Michael, because it's so endemic sounding. Yes,
the
round and round she goes. Today's winner, Dale Morris from San Diego, California. He will receive unlimited submissions on Actors Access for a full year. Dale, if you're listening, congratulations, and we will also alert you through our Facebook page, or as I call it, Faccio di Libro.
Oh, look at that.
Pagina di Faccio di Libro. Michael, would you give the incredibly handsome gentleman to my right the intro he is due?
Yes, I will. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a man you may have seen on tour in Caroline or Change, or Five Guys Named Mo, or maybe you've seen him on the small screen in Monk, Wizards of Waverly Place, Disney's TV hit series, Criminal Minds, or NCIS. And if you missed all that... Be sure not to miss him as Starkey in the critically acclaimed Peter Pan, starring Kathy Rigby, in a limited engagement through January 27th, right here in Los Angeles at the Pantages Theater. And it's on tour, so it may be coming to a city next to you, and I believe it goes through April, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it does.
Would you please welcome Michael Shepard?
I feel like I should have some witty comment at the end where I pull my sunglasses off and say something like,
pithy.
She'll burn for that.
Say something pithy, yes. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
I feel like we're old friends.
I know. Isn't it amazing?
And I know that's such a Hollywood thing to say, but I truly feel that.
But we have like 30 years of history.
We have
the same history, but we've never met.
I bet if we looked at our Facebook, we would have, and no exaggeration, I bet we would have over 100 friends in common.
You know what? It's kind of the thing with Facebook. I'll like look in
Faccio di Libro.
Faccio di Libro. Yes. I look at Facebook, and then some name will pop up, and you have like 420 friends. I go, I don't know who this person is.
Yeah,
right.
You know?
Yeah, and yet you share. Yeah. And the only thing that bothers me about it is the people who I didn't like when they were 3 feet away from me in homeroom. And now we're 3,000 miles apart. It's like, let me be my pal. It's like, chuckles. You're on the radio now.
My main professor in college, I won't say his name, Dr. Ficca, he told me that, you're too fat, you're too black, and you're too gay. So you will never make it in this business. Well, he tried to Facebook me the other day, and I told him, well, your fat, black, gay friend here will not be accepting your invitation.
Oh. Too fat,
too black and too,
too gay.
What's
no,
too?
Did
I mean,
not.
I don't know. I know too gay, and I'm not it.
No,
you are not. Oh man,
I love that you did that.
Yeah, it's like that's never gonna happen.
No.
Never going to happen.
You know, why? I tell you,
well,
though.
Why would anybody ever need to say something like that to another human being?
I know.
And especially a teacher who is supposed to nurture
you.
I will tell you exactly. If I could field this, for
absolutely.
And then you can.
Because I'm mad for you.
There's a great line in the Loudon Wainwright song, and it is, if I can't be the hero in my life, I'll be the villain in yours.
There you go.
That's what it is.
Well, you know, my thing was this. It actually pushed me. Because I keep remembering, I mean, there are three teachers in my life that said similar things to me. And every time I started like going, oh, this audition is going to be too much, or this is going to be, you know, I remember what they said to me. I go, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this done today.
So you used it as fuel. Yeah.
It's always been fuel.
Yeah.
Always.
You have to. And they don't realize what a positive effect they have on you because they've given you something to work for.
I did. And it's so funny because I did thank him for it.
Well,
because it is. I mean, it has fueled me, and you know, it's funny because I think of the people that he sort of mollycoddled through the entire process of college, and you're going to be a great success, or now you know, doing things like you know, working at you know, shoe warehouses.
Yeah, but, right.
You know, and I'm like, okay, there you go.
If only you were blacker and gayer, you have a whole lot more going on.
You'd be running the oldest lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer questioning, intersex, two-spirited theater in the country.
And I'm going to give you that.
Yes. Oh my God. Michael, did you always know that you wanted to be in the entertainment
industry? I'm sorry. Did you always know you were black?
Actually, that's a funny story. I'm going to address both of these. I was groomed to be a doctor by my family. That's all they wanted me to be because I was going to, you know, they figured that by the time I went through medical school and, you know, interns and all that, internships and all that, I would be able to come back to Alton, Illinois to be the new black doctor because the old black doctor would be dead. So I would come back and take care of all the old black people. And I realized that really wasn't my calling when I got to college. And I mean, I was pre-med and did all the things I was supposed to do. And I was literally sitting in the quad one day and I started hanging around actors, always a bad thing. And one of them said, hey, I'm doing You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. I was like, oh, that's cool. And he goes, do you want to play Snoopy? I was like, what? And I played Snoopy. And the head of the theater department, Carol Brandt, came and saw it. She goes, oh, why aren't you in the theater department? I go, you tell me, why am I not in the theater department? And the next day I was.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Because I had, you know, I was going to be a doctor. And it was very upsetting to my family.
How did they take it?
Well, they were, it was not a good time. Not a good time. But what helped is right when I left, I went to Illinois Wesleyan. When I left Wesleyan, I went to Chicago. And I got a 3-episode arc as a doctor on ER. So everything, and you know,
your give back.
I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
Exactly. But what I found out was that it's more important for a black mother to have their child on TV than be a real doctor because they can go to church and go, my baby on TV.
Yeah.
You see him on the ER.
He was on the ER.
He's on the ER.
Ain't no chiropodist scraping feet for the mother.
No.
So very much a parallel with my own life because my dad wanted me to be an attorney, and it happened that I went into entertainment, into the theater, professional theater. Somebody saw me. I was with my folks. Boom. One thing led to another. Television, movies, all that stuff. And my father never acknowledged it until I got into television, and he could pick up the phone and call his friends.
It's a powerful medium.
Say, oh, my kid's going to be on the Doris Day show tomorrow night, or you know, whatever the case may be. Which was always very disappointing to me, in my heart. I wanted him to support me for what I did, at that particular time. Mm-hmm. Though I wasn't trying to become a star because that wasn't my path, and I knew that. I was more interested in the business side of it. So I ultimately ended up doing exactly what I wanted to do in the entertainment business, which is what I do now.
Yeah. And same here. I mean, I don't care about people go, well, don't you want to be a star and have your own show? I would love to be, you know, a regular in a series. So I could, you know, but only because I need to pay my mortgage. I need to put my two kids through school. Right. That's the reason I need to be on a series. I don't need to be in the National Enquirer every week.
How old are your children?
10 and 6. Sebastian and Maxwell Pearl.
Wow.
Maxwell awesome. Pearl.
Yeah, she's
lovely
my diva.
Name.
She's the diva.
Oh, that name. You gave her a name to walk into.
Well, she chose her own name. When my husband and I adopted, she was 18 hours old, And we went into the nursery, and there she is. And we knew that we wanted sort of a dame name like Roxy or Stella.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
And we liked Maxie, but we were like, I don't care for Maxine. Sorry, Maxine's out there. We just didn't care for it. And we went, Maxwell. Maxwell for a girl? Maxwell?
Yes.
And we went, Maxwell Pearl, which is my grandmother's name. I said, Maxwell Pearl. So we bent down to her crib and was like, Roxy, she made no move. Stella, no move. Ursula, no move. Maxwell, she went, and we did it three times, and every time in different orders, and every time we said Maxwell, she related. She, you know, her body just sort of reacted to it. We went, she chose her own name, and she wears it proudly.
I bet she does.
And I love a girl with a boy. That is powerful.
Yeah. And we thought we were the only one until, what's the little... blonde chick who was on the Weight Watchers and didn't have the baby and then couldn't lose
Jessica
it. Jessica Simpson named her daughter Maxwell.
No!
Yes.
She probably found out about it.
Oh, she had to.
She stopped.
Well, I know about that strong... I know about that whole strong feeling thing because my sister, Irving...
See, lady, hey,
does it work if it's something like a boy with the girl name? Is that as powerful?
Well,
like,
actually, we just one of our guests today who won the prize is Dale Morris, and he's an actor and a male. And
I thought he sounded familiar.
I would say Dale is more traditionally a female name. Wouldn't you say?
I know tons of boy dudes. Yeah. Like Leslie.
Yeah, I know more
what about
Lauren?
Some Leslies.
Yeah. Lauren.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
That's cool.
But I love
Very
your daughter's
cool.
name.
That's
love
a great
it.
Name. It's and it's a great story, too. Now, I want to ask you something, because you were talking about when we were talking to Anita about splitting energies. You're obviously a very accomplished actor, but you also have the Celebration Theater, which you're back as artistic director, co-artistic director,
after
with the other gentleman's
break,
name?
Michael Matthews.
Michael Matthews.
The amazingly talented Michael Matthews.
Now, do you find that dissipates your energies, or do you find, because I'm managing director of a theater company, and I sometimes feel like I'm shortchanging myself creatively because of the workload of keeping a theater company afloat. You ever feel that way?
When I was first artistic director of Celebration Theater, which is a long story, won't get into it, but that's because I was spending 70 to 80 hours a week there because we were trying to rebuild the brand.
Right.
That sort of like, I found it very hard to do anything else
but
that. But now, being a co-artistic director, we've set it up that, you know, we'll spend this amount of time in the theater, you know, which allows me time to write. It allows me time to actually, you know, I can be there if Michael directs another project at a different theater. I'm there. Or if I choose to do another show someplace else, he'll be there. We're able to trade off more.
I got you.
So it's going to be a lot easier. It won't be any easier. It is the time frame will be different.
You just have your scheduling your time better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the gentleman that was serving as the artistic director,
John Michael Beck.
John Michael, who's a lovely, lovely man. Now he'll stay involved, but on the board. Is
yes.
that correct?
He's going to become a board member now.
Yeah. Well, he also started something there. I think on Tuesday nights. What
CT
is it?
Tuesdays.
That's right.
And what it is, it's just giving a voice to new playwrights. And it has been incredibly... It
Did
started
you say CT Tuesdays?
Celebration Theater Tuesdays.
Oh, okay, good.
CT Tuesdays.
Don't lose me in the jargon.
These are very technical theater terms. I hope you can keep
Don't that. Hold up anything shiny when you're talking to me, because I'll just get thrown.
It started when I was actually... John Michael Beck was actually my associate artistic director, and we started CT Tuesdays about 3 years ago. And since then, CT Tuesdays has been recognized by the GLAAD committee and two shows that we've done in CT Tuesdays.
That's awesome.
The workshops have been recognized by GLAAD as best productions in LA.
Just the workshops?
Just the workshops.
Well,
that's
fantastic.
I mean,
that's
by an
great.
Artist named Chris Phillips. So we're very excited, and it's one of those things that it just sells out because people are you know, they don't want to pay $40 to see a new work. But they'll throw in $5 or $10 see a new work that's been workshopped and put on its feet.
And that's what keeps the small theaters afloat, because it's not so much monetary return, it's just awareness.
Right.
That people
but you want
know
new people coming into your theater
create,
because they go,
yeah.
oh, if you're doing this, and I really need to see what your main stage shows are.
When you actually have costumes and a set.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
Well, and 2012 was a good year for you because you also were a part of The Color Purple.
Yes.
And accepted an Ovation Award.
Color Purple was nominated for 11 Ovation Awards.
Yes, I know.
And
I was there.
Six.
Yes.
I'm very proud. In that that production started.
Can I just say you sang your face off in that? Can I just say that? Mm. Amen.
I will allow you to say that. I will allow you to say
you
that.
Sang your face off. It made for an awkward act, too.
We had LaToya on the show.
Yes. LaToya London?
My love interest. My love interest.
Yes, she's marvelous.
I was very proud. That sort of that whole production sort of started off as a joke, actually, because Michael Matthews and I, you know, we've been sort of these partners in crime for the last 8 years. And we were sitting in our office, which is a bar, and we were drinking, going, well, what should we do? And all of a sudden, I said, let's do The Color Purple. He goes, let's do it. And we started doing casting choices in our head. You know, look at Jack A. You know, and things like that. And I literally went back to the theater and went, I'm going to apply for the rights, thinking that a 64-seat theater mm-hmm. is never going to get the rights to do The Color Purple. Well, 4 days later, I had the rights. And I was like, when did I do that? And we decided to do it, and we pulled it together, and you know, decided to retell the story, because I think it got lost in the Broadway production. Mm-hmm. It sort of got lost in the spectacle, as opposed to just telling this very beautiful story of this woman.
Because it's a very private tale. Yeah. I mean, we saw it on a grand canvas, but it's a story of one woman
and her journey. And the people that come in and out of her life and affect her and affect change in her life.
Wow.
Well, our friend Ali Willis, who we're all friends of, I think, certainly gave high marks to that production, didn't she?
She opened up her home to you. She saw the show, I think, like 8 times.
Wow.
Which was sort of unheard of. She was like, you know, I won't say exactly what she says because I don't want to say because there are other productions of Color Purple that have happened, but she was very pleased with this production.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
She's an awesome lady.
That's incredible.
What an awesome show.
I want to remind people before we get there of where you can see Michael, and that is only until the 27th. It's just 2 more weeks, at least in L.A. I mean, the tour continues. But this is at the Pantages Theater, and this is Kathy Rigby is Peter Pan. And, of course, for tickets for that, you can go to BroadwayLA.org or Ticketmaster.com or call 1-800-982-2787. And as Michael said, you can also go up to the Pantages box office or go across the street to the get the martini. Kettle one, straight up.
That's exactly what I drink.
Oh, that's a W. Yeah, I'm sorry. See, I was so drunk. To me, it was an M.
You know what's funny? That's exactly what I drink all the time. Kettle one martini, straight up. Olive.
Extra dry?
Extra dry, cold.
Right. And whisper vermouth.
Wave the bottle over the top of the martini.
No. We used to say, just whisper vermouth, and the bartender goes, vermouth, and I'd go, not so loud. And, of course, Nita is at the Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, and that is this Sunday, and that's 5303 Lancashire in North Hollywood. Reservations 818-754-8700. We want to ask them about the performance thing, but we also are going to have Nita play us off the air with one voice
Great.
At the end of the hour.
But we do have to baptize Michael, and then Nita's going to give us another go at one of her career memories.
Okay, so we have 3 minutes. Can you tell us about something that performance problem, something that went south for you?
I have something that went south. Yes. When I was in college, I decided I went to audition for Great America, and I was in Bloomington, Illinois, and I drove up with my best friend Steven. We drove to Chicago early in the morning because the audition started at 9 or 10, and we ate crap on the road, and we get there. For some reason, I decided to wear a blue and white striped navy top and white pants and white tennis shoes. And I sort of like about 20 minutes before I know my name was being called, I start getting sick and realize I had to go to the bathroom really bad, and I didn't quite make it in my white pants. And so I get there, and I pull my pants down, and I realize that I've, you know, pooped myself. And I go, but I'm looking at the pants. Are the pants okay? I'm like, oh, okay, great. It didn't seep through. So I, you know, kind of rip off the underwear and throw them away, clean myself up as best I can. Go in and do my audition, where I realize I'm standing in front of all these, family people doing a family show in white pants with no underwear. Yeah, I didn't book that job.
Oh, man.
I think I got a phone number too, though, but I didn't book the job.
Oh, Nita, you got a minute. You got one for us?
Yeah, I was doing a show at Carlos and Charlie's. Remember Carlos and Charlie's?
Oh, of course.
And we had built the stage because they had such a small space, and there wasn't a clear path to get to, and I had this beautiful dress, And I was walking to it and missed the stage and went down, face down on the stage.
Oh.
And there was just sort of... And then I got up and I just said, that hurt. And then we went on with the show.
What else can you say?
Exactly.
Everyone?
I mean, face planted on the stage.
Oh, man.
Oh man. Cow.
Yeah. See, I don't have that problem. My face would be fine. I got a good amount of clearance before the face hits.
Well,
it was a pleasure to have both of you on.
Thank
you.
I just sitting next to Miss Nita Whitaker, LaFontaine. She's, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, pretty dreamy, isn't she?
Adore you.
Back at you, Michael. Thank you.
And speaking of Nita, we're going to have her play us off the air. This is One Voice from the CD of the same name, yes?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Nita.
And
thank
Michael,
you,
Paul.
Thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Michael, I hope you're feeling better. I hope your sciatica goes away.
Thank you.
And here we go, and we will see you all next week.
Our brothers and our sisters, rewrite the words that shape the tones of life. Just raise the tempo and turn up the volume. Crescendo in the symphony for what is right. If we find together, undivided, all of God's people, carrying the flame of hope, singing the notes of love, filling the world with peace, the melody of harmony.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk Radio.